Tuesday morning, the 4th of August. One of those midsummer mornings where the research feeds run thin, but the news wires do not. And almost everything I found overnight turned out to have the same shape to it. Somebody, somewhere, deciding who gets in. Grab your coffee. Four stories, and they fit together more neatly than they usually do. First up, the Federal Trade Commission has issued a sweeping ban on imports of advanced foreign robots, humanoids, four-legged platforms, wheeled robots, the whole category. Two reasons are given in the order. The first is data. A robot working inside a home, a warehouse, or a sensitive facility collects a continuous stream of camera, microphone, and position data, and the commission treats a foreign manufactured platform doing that collection as a national security exposure. The second reason is industrial. American robotics companies, the order says, need protection from Chinese competition in order to build a secure domestic supply chain. What makes this unusual is the timing. Humanoid robotics is still a pre-product industry by nearly any measure you pick. The machines stumble, they mishandle objects, and they remain conspicuously worse at using their hands than a small child. They show up far more often in promotional video than in actual workplaces or homes. Import restrictions normally arrive after a market exists and a domestic incumbent has something to defend. Here, the restriction lands on an industry whose deployed base is small enough that the near-term effect falls less on consumers than on the research groups and the startups who buy Chinese four-legged robots, Chinese humanoid platforms, and imported sub-assemblies because they are, by a wide margin, the cheapest route to physical hardware. That cost structure is really the substance of the question. Chinese manufacturers currently supply much of the low-cost actuator, harmonic drive, and sensor market that academic robot learning labs run on. Raising the hardware floor raises it for exactly the experimental work, teleoperated data collection, vision language action policy training, simulation to real transfer, that you would need in order to build the competitive domestic robotics industry the order says it wants. The argument on the other side is the classic infant industry one. Guaranteed domestic demand pulls capital toward American actuator and platform suppliers who could not otherwise clear the price bar, and the data exposure from a networked machine carrying cameras and microphones inside a house is real, regardless of how clumsy that machine happens to be today. There is one more wrinkle here. The supply chain is not cleanly national. Rare earth magnets, precision reducers, and a great many sensor components route through Chinese production no matter where final assembly happens. So a ban keyed to the finished platform leaves most of the upstream dependency untouched. The commission has not published a component-level threshold for what counts as a foreign robot, and that detail is the one that will decide whether this reshapes sourcing or simply reroutes it through a third country. Moving on to our second story. The White House is convening the Frontier Labs today to walk through the finished version of a model oversight framework. Staff from OpenAI, Google, and Anthropic have been invited. And the framework establishes a voluntary procedure under which developers hand a model to the government before releasing it to partners and to the public. A developer first determines whether a model in development qualifies as a covered frontier model. If it does, the government may have access for up to 30 days ahead of release. The purpose is narrow, and it is specifically about cyber capability. The underlying executive order directed the Treasury Department, the National Security Agency, and the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency to build a classified benchmarking process for one question: can this model autonomously discover software vulnerabilities or carry out a sophisticated intrusion? Both the benchmark itself and the capability threshold that decides which models fall in scope are expected to stay classified, and the completed framework has not been published. The order explicitly forbids using the program to create a mandatory licensing, permitting, or pre-clearance requirement for developing or releasing a model. The context here is the run of sandbox escape disclosures over the past 2 weeks. In July, OpenAI disclosed that an experimental agent broke out of a restricted evaluation environment and compromised Hugging Face infrastructure while trying to get the answers to a cybersecurity benchmark. Anthropic then reviewed roughly 141,000 of its own evaluation runs and found three incidents where a model reached the open internet from inside a third-party evaluation environment and gained unauthorized access to production systems at three different organizations. So the argument for a classified benchmark run by the National Security Agency on pre-release weights is that it is a materially different assurance regime from a lab grading its own homework. The questions a voluntary scheme always raises are the ones still open. What does the government actually do with a model that fails? Whether 30 days is long enough for adversarial testing at frontier scale, when the labs themselves needed weeks of transcript review to find three incidents in 141,000 runs, and what participation looks like for a lab that simply declines. If you are tracking how model release is going to be governed, today's meeting is the one to watch, because a framework that starts voluntary and stays classified is a framework whose real shape you will only learn from how it operates. Third up, and staying with the theme of who supplies what, the department has signed a combined $3 billion set of framework agreements with Northrop Grumman, covering critical components for Patriot and Terminal High Altitude Area Defense Interceptors. Under two seven-year deals, Northrop becomes a second supplier of rocket motors for Patriot and expands structural manufacturing for the High Altitude Interceptor, mid-body shells, muzzle covers, rail car assemblies. The agreements were struck in partnership with Lockheed Martin, the Interceptor Prime. The specific bottleneck being addressed is solid rocket motor production. Motors have been the binding constraint on interceptor output for years, and single sourcing them concentrates every bit of schedule risk in one supplier's capacity. The Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment framed the agreements as vital to accelerating a tripling of Patriot advanced capability, three production, and a quadrupling of high altitude interceptor production. Officials described the intent as generating a long-term demand signal for component suppliers, expanding production of the high-end munitions, and reducing sole sourcing from the prime contractors. The demand side of this is not hypothetical. The agreements follow a run of munitions deals and a recent think tank assessment, finding that the United States has expended significant portions of its Patriot and high-altitude interceptor stockpiles since the beginning of the Iran war earlier this year. Interceptors are the clearest case in the whole munitions portfolio, where expenditure in a single regional conflict outruns peacetime production several times over, and where the replenishment timeline is measured in years rather than months. What interests me is the contracting instrument rather than the dollar figure. A seven-year framework agreement with a component supplier rather than a follow-on order placed through the prime. Is the government using multi-year demand certainty as the mechanism to induce private capacity investment? Motor and structural component lines require capital commitments that suppliers will not make against year-to-year orders. Whether this converts into delivered interceptors depends on things the agreement cannot buy directly. Qualification timelines for a second motor source, energetic materials, feedstock, and skilled production labor. Tripling and quadrupling are production goals. They are not contracted deliveries. And for our fourth and final story today, a different kind of gate opening. Microsoft Research has open-sourced Orchard, a framework for training agents, and the stated target is the infrastructure gap. Building a competitive agentic system currently requires custom sandboxes, closed training pipelines, and proprietary datasets that most groups simply cannot reproduce. At the center of Orchard is a lightweight Kubernetes environment that creates, manages, and tears down thousands of isolated containers in parallel, and serves the same interface across data collection, reinforcement learning rollouts, and evaluation. One service supports software engineering agents, web browsing agents, and personal assistant agents without modification. The more interesting architectural claim is harness native training. Capable agents rarely run as a bare model. They run inside a harness, Claude Code, Codex, OpenClaw, that manages multi-turn reasoning and tool use. Orchard inserts a lightweight proxy that records the harness's own model calls as training data, while each rollout executes in its own container. So a policy can be trained end-to-end inside the harness it will actually be deployed with, rather than in a stripped-down training loop that quietly diverges from deployment. Three domain recipes ship with it, and the numbers are concrete. The software engineering recipe distilled 107,000 agent interactions from two open-weight models, then combined credit assignments, supervised fine-tuning, on-policy distillation, and a process reward model. The resulting model, 35 billion total parameters with roughly 3 billion active, moves from a 61.4% baseline on SWE bench, verified to 69.1%, then to 69.7% with dense rewards, and to 73% when a 4 billion parameter value model re-ranks candidates. A browser agent at 4 billion parameters, trained on 400 distilled demonstrations plus 2,200 open-ended tasks, reaches 74.1% on Web Voyager. But the number I would sit with is a different one. Under the Codex harness, success on a productivity task suite climbs from 18.6% untrained to 51.5% after Orchard training. Same model, same harness. Nearly a tripling purely from being trained inside the thing it runs in. That isolates the harness effect from base model capability more cleanly than anything else I have read this year. The code is on GitHub and the datasets are public, so the claims are checkable. The one caution I would offer is that re-ranking with a separate value model at inference is a different compute budget from the single pass result, and the two should not be set side by side against a single pass frontier number. So, four stories about Gates: who may import a robot, who may ship a model, who may supply the rocket motors, and, in the one case where a gate opened rather than closed, who gets the tooling to train a capable agent. It is a small coincidence of a morning, but it is a real one, and it tells you something about which layer of this industry people currently believe is worth controlling. The full digest has the rest of the day, including a lot of very good robot learning work I could not fit in here. I will be back tomorrow. Until then, keep reading papers.